Hey guys, Casey here. We have an exciting announcement.
Woo-hoo!
Do you love Down the Foxhole?
Yeah.
And do you love money?
Yeah.
Then this is for you.
Woo-hoo!
We are running a reviews contest, guys. So if you write us a review on iTunes from now until December 20th, you'll be automatically entered to win a $100 gift card to Amazon. And who doesn't order something from Amazon every single week?
Woohoo, every day.
So the winner will be announced on December 21st on our Instagram. So good luck, and we can't wait to read.
Yeah, just remember to leave us your Instagram handle on your review so that we can find you. Also, sometimes people have a problem with their username. All you have to do is add a unique number. So, for example, if I'm Erin Fabio, I might have to be Erin Fabio 1234. Just so you know, if it keeps rejecting you, it's got some problems.
Good call.
Thank you.
See you out there. Welcome to The Foxhole. Down the Foxhole is a podcast where we get real candid, real funny, and real weird on a weekly basis. I'm Casey Taylor.
And I'm Erin Fabio. The Foxhole is a space to inspire and give permission to each other to start that business, keep working towards that dream, or totally switch gears and take the big risks to reap the big reward.
We're big believers that there's no one size fits all and that each of our stories is unique and worth sharing. So
let's go down the foxhole.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. So we're here today with Nikki Nellis, who I'm going to let her tell us what she does because I've been pitching her on the PR side for years and years, and it seems like you do a little bit of everything. So if you could just give a little intro about yourself and your business, that would be super.
Okay, great. I'll try to keep it short and sweet because I know you guys have like an hour show. I started covering the DC food and wine community about 15 years ago. I launched a website called thelistareyouonit.com. It's an online e-zine. We do blast it out every week to about 40,000 subscribers. But of course, you know, there's no membership or anything. You can just go and check it out. And we really write about every food and wine event happening in the DC metro area. So if you're really into food and restaurants and wine and spirits and beer or anything that has an industry component to it, it's all on our calendar. And of course, we cover openings and restaurants coming soon. And we have a little buzz column where we write about promotions happening around town. But the whole point of it was to keep people abreast of everything that was going on in the DC food and wine community. At that time, there were no blogs. I was pre-blog. Mm-hmm. So it was information that I wanted that I couldn't find, and I was able to create it. And then because of that, I mean, we can get into it more detail later, but because of the list, I got all these other opportunities. So I started writing for publications. I got this radio gig with WTOP, which led to my radio show, Foodie and the Beast, which just celebrated its 10-year anniversary.
So cool. Oh my gosh, amazing.
Thank you. And then I have one more radio show called Industry Night, and that's at the Line Hotel. Mm-hmm. And then because of what I do in the industry, I mean, I do a little television thing. So it's multi-pronged and multi-layered. So when people ask me what I do, I tell them I'm multimedia food coverage. That's okay. Sort of the best way to sort of explain what I'm doing.
Like the OG of foodiness in this town for sure. And like, am I mistaken that you have something like 5 kids too?
I do. I do have children. So when I married my husband, he came with 3.
Ah.
And then we added 2 more. So there are 5 total.
Wow.
You and I are in very different places. I'm like getting rid of them and you're just putting them in the world. So it's a little different.
That must feel good.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I honestly just don't know how you do it all. So when people ask you that question, how do you do it all? What's your response for that?
Well, I mean, it's really different for me now because I just have a 16-year-old girl left in my house. When I started, you know, 15 years ago and everybody was, you know, and I had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old and then 3 teenage boys as well in the house. It was really a balance, but I think I was really fortunate because I didn't know what I was doing. And I was
ignorant.
Right. You know, like I didn't have a mentor. There was nobody to tell me how it worked. And I had a lot of support, obviously, from my husband, but I also had, being in this world, I met the most incredible women. So right when I launched the list, I met a bunch of women in the industry, a bunch of women writers, a bunch of women in PR, mm-hmm. and we really formed this huge collective. Unintentional, you know, it wasn't like we all sat around and been like, oh, let's support one another. Mm-hmm. We really became each other's support system that still exists today. I'm really, really fortunate.
That's great.
That's so awesome.
Are you from the DC area?
I'm not. I'm originally from New Jersey.
Okay. I feel like right now.
Oh, do I have a Jersey girl?
Yes, yeah, we're from Jersey.
Yeah, your hair's not big. So you got to tease that up. You got to tease that hair up.
I know, right?
Nikki's got some great hair.
Yeah, I'm from like the shore area, like Asbury Park, Point Pleasant.
Oh, so your hair should be huge.
She's from the actual Jersey Shore.
I'm from the north part of Jersey. We keep our hair like mildly hot. But,
yeah. I love it.
I know. She's been out of the Jersey for too long, maybe.
Yes, Jersey. Okay. Oh my gosh.
So how'd you
Well, know? Anyway, yeah. So I grew up in Jersey, went to school in Boston, Got but it. I did my internships in college down here. I did a pure serendipity, excuse me. My first internship was with WTOP, where I now do work. And then I also did an internship at NPR.
Cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So did you kind of always know you wanted to be in that media world, or how did you get into the food industry / multimedia industry?
So, you know, if you asked me, like, when I was a junior in college, what my dream job would have been, I would have been, like, a food critic. Like, mm-hmm. I've always been super into food. You know, girlfriends and I in high school used to entertain, like, I've been entertaining since I was 13. Like, yeah. As soon as my mom let me get into that kitchen and really cook, we threw, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. We threw dinner parties. We loved being little adults. We, yeah. Gourmet magazine was like our Bible. So I loved food. I loved cooking. I loved entertaining. I thought being a food critic was the epitome of it all. But I have to be honest, when I was in when I graduated from college, I really didn't know how to get there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
I guess I should have. There's a roadmap for you.
You know, but I wasn't paying attention enough in college. I mean, I was in Boston. There were certainly other things going on.
there was a college town, man.
You know what I mean? Like, there was an incredible nightlife to pay attention to. Yeah. So when I got out of college and I moved to DC, I became an event planner for a women's association. It did events all around the country for women state legislators. It was an incredible gig. And, you know, I got to stay in some of the best places around the country, and I really loved it. And I did that for quite a long time. It was sort of like good news, bad news. Like, yeah. I considered myself a concierge to my friends just because I read Washingtonian and the Washington Post, because at that time, that was the only way to know about what was going on in D.C. And when I became pregnant with my, you know, first actual child, mm-hmm. Even though I worked for a women's organization, they weren't really keen on women having babies.
Crazy.
So
what?
I know. Isn't that crazy? It's so though.
It's just crazy because it's still like that. And that's what's just so bonkers.
It is. So there was a fabulous article in the New York Times the other day. I don't know if you saw it, about how hard it is for women when they're pregnant in, you know, these high power positions, and how people totally take them down when they come back, which I don't, whatever. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
So anyway, so, you know, they were not really gracious. And I really had to figure out what to do. So I started baking out of my house for area restaurants, which was highly illegal, but nobody seemed to care. You know, it was like before mess hall, like it was before these incubators. And that led me to taking classes. Roberta Donna had Galileo. I mean, I'm so dating myself here, but he had this restaurant and he would do these classes in his laboratory. And, you know, you had to figure out when the classes were happening. It was totally, you know, they used mail, you know, the mail to like send out these newsletters.
Like postal service.
Right. No, but they weren't using email yet. I mean, this is only 15 or 16 years. Well, let's see. 18. So yeah, 16 years ago. So, I mean, you would get a newsletter and like the class was 2 weeks ago. And so that was sort of the impetus. I was like, I know there's more going on. And I actually, he was phenomenal to me. And I, he said, I'm going to introduce you to all the chefs. Like when I told him what I wanted to do, because at first I was like, I want you to advertise. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to advertise. Which made sense. Yeah. Now looking back, I was like, of course, that totally makes sense. So they used to have something called the Chef's Club, which the whole crew used to go to, like Michel Richard and Robert Wiedemeyer and Brian McBride and Jeff Boobin, like the whole old guard, right?
Yeah.
And they used to do it like at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night.
Cool.
And they would bring like vendors and purveyors that they wanted others to know about. So like there were people in the wine industry and people in the coffee industry, and then me. And that's how I met everybody. I mean, it's the gift that keeps on giving, because that's how I met everybody. I explained to everybody what I was doing. And between Roberta Donna and Joan Hisayoka, who was in PR, she passed away several years ago. But I called her up, told her about what I was doing, and she introduced me to every PR person in the city. She's like, you're going to take – she gave me like a step-by-step. You're going to take them out for coffee, or you're going to talk to them on the phone. You're going to tell them what you want to do, and they're going to provide you with info. Mm. And just to be fair, like I didn't – I just thought I was looking for events. I didn't know I was going to be provided with everything else, which I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. So I was really, really fortunate – that people got what I wanted to do and supported it right from the get-go.
Cool.
So cool.
I have so many questions now. I mean,
yeah. So when did you start, officially start the website?
So the way it worked was, so I did have a partner, for about 20 minutes, like for 6 months. For 6 months, I had a partner. I thought she was more connected to the industry when we first got together. And my husband is in advertising and marketing. Mm-hmm. So he had people, you know, I mean, I had to pay them, but he had people who were able to create a website for me because, you know, 15 or 16 years ago, you know, you couldn't just go online and buy a website. It was somebody had to build it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And design it. So it was totally different. And my Emma, you know, and or Constant Contact, like none of those things existed. Right. So my husband's company had a blast system, which, I mean, when I look back, like back then, blasting was atrociously expensive. You know, like now it costs a couple of dollars a month. But so I had access. So I was really lucky that I had access to people who could build a site for me, and I had access to this blast system that, you know, that other people didn't have access to. And we started with about 500 names on the list. And we got a lot of press very early on, which was really kind of surprising. I wasn't thinking that that was going to be part of it. I mean, keep in mind, there's no Twitter,
right?
No Facebook. There's no Instagram, like there's no social, as the only thing there is to forward it via email. Like that's it. That is the only way to build your list and, you know, get people's attention. Mm-hmm. And the Washington Post wrote the first article about it. And they were very, very supportive, which was kind of amazing because they really should have been doing what I was doing.
That is amazing.
You know, like at that point in time, they just weren't using, they weren't putting original content on their websites yet. Do you know what I mean? Like they were still kind of, the internet was still new enough that newspapers weren't really clear how to integrate new content or other content onto the site. I mean, now obviously it's totally and completely different, but back then, like it was all new territory.
So cool.
So did you build it as a newsletter and then the website was kind of the landing page at first?
Yes, that's exactly. So I would send out, the newsletter would be, and I didn't know at the time what I was asking that it was very difficult to do, but the guy, this lovely guy named Will Hurley, never said no to me. And anything I asked for, he was like, okay, we can do that. And it wasn't until it was time to like create a new website and, you know, blog sites, you know, it was easier to sort of put a skin over a site and stuff like that. and I was working with my latest web designer, and I was asking for all these things, and he's like, you know, that's really hard, right? And I was like, no, I had no idea it was hard. I just asked for it, and he did it.
What's the movie where she's like, what, like it's hard?
Oh my gosh.
Right, exactly. I was like, I always say, you know, like whenever I have to talk to my web people, I'm like, I run a website, but I know nothing about the web. You know, like I'm all about the content. I'm not about the technology.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's smart. Some people try to do everything. At least you like know your area, you know?
Oh yeah. No. I don't even want to pretend. And I'm so fortunate because I now have such an amazing team of people who upload all the data and, you know, go to events and work on the site. I'm always incredibly grateful that I've been able to find people who are, treat the site like it's their own and as supportive about it. I'm really fortunate.
That's great. So what does your team look like these days?
So I have about, it's an ever evolving 8 to 10 people. Mm-hmm. So I have Molly, Catherine, Anna. So I have three people who've been with me. Molly's been with me for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Molly and I worked together at that other organization together. So we've been friends for a very long time. And we both had children at the same time. And, you know, I started this when my youngest was one. Mm. And she was kind of like, I could do some work. And, you know, she was like, I can help you out. So I brought her in early on, and she has a very fancy title. She's my director of sales and marketing. And then Anna's been with me for over 6 years, and she is just my everything. She goes to events. She handles a ton of my social media. And she, you know, is another idea person, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
Catherine is one of the writers on staff, but she's really been like, she's literally on staff. And then the rest of the people who work for me, I call them my data people, because they're uploading all the events, which, I mean, as you can imagine what it's like in DC right now, there's so many events.
Yeah,
and like with Thanksgiving and the holidays, like I, so we have right now there's four people uploading events.
Wow.
And then I have two people who help out with both the radio shows. That's what my team looks like.
So let's talk about the food scene in DC, because I'm from here originally, and I always say, like, you know, growing up there were a lot of pencil skirts and sneakers, and there was not a lot of good food, you know, like DC wasn't like a cool town, at least to like a kid growing up around here at the time. And now we just have so much talent and so many amazing places to go and things to eat. So sort of, I just wanted to get your take on like how this scene has changed and what your thoughts are about it.
Well, so where did you grow up?
In Montgomery County.
Oh, okay. So, you know, here's the thing about the DC dining scene, I think, and I believe in being very careful about it, because I would never want to offend those who came before what's going on now. There was a dining scene in DC filled with great chefs and great talent, but it wasn't the breadth and depth that it is now for multiple reasons. First of all, the real estate didn't exist. I mean, you grew up in Montgomery County, so you understand. Like, did you know what the Navy Yard was? Did you ever hear of Shaw, Bloomingdale, LaDroit? You know, I mean, 14th Street 20 years ago. You know, when I first moved down to D.C., I lived in Adams Morgan on 18th and T, and one of my relatives who lived down here was like, yeah, you're like just on the border of maybe that's not safe. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
totally.
Like, can you even imagine now?
No.
So there were whole areas that did not exist, right? So that's number one.
Sure.
And the influx of money for real estate and people is also a major game changer in the dining scene. So I think one of the problems always was about DC dining was that because it wasn't massive, it meant it wasn't good, which was not the case. But do you know what I'm saying? So, but now it is
like,
massive.
Also, the only way to know about anything was, like you were saying, like the Washington Post or Washingtonian or the local news. So
that's entirely true. And actually, what's really interesting about that comment is that local news didn't cover food. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was no coverage of food in the local news. And even Washingtonian and and Washington Post, their coverage of...
Are you there with us?
I think it's, listen, not that there wasn't great. Phyllis Richmond did a move.
Sorry, could you start from...
Oh, are you there?
Interesting. Can you start from what's interesting about the Post?
Yeah, so, you know, the Washington Post and Washingtonian certainly covered food. And, you know, you have writers like Phyllis Richmond, who did amazing things for the D.C. food and wine community. But there wasn't this tell us everything now kind of way of writing, right? So you just didn't have this access to this kind of information. Yeah. And I remember actually sitting in one of those Roberta Donna classes, I was sitting with Thomas Head, who wrote for Washingtonian, and this was before the list had started yet, and I said to him, I was like, I want to know if a chef who works here at Roberta Donna's leaves here and goes works at the restaurant across the street, that he's over there now. I was like, that's information I want to know. And he said back to me, I don't think anybody else wants that information. I was like, I think you're wrong. I think people want to know that. I want to know it. And now, you know, I mean, now that's what you're seeing. You know, every day it's breaking news about chefs leaving and going someplace else and opening up new restaurants. I mean, it was a cultural shift food-wise on content and what people wanted to know. And I think a lot of that you can thank to, and foremost, the Food Network. Okay. Love it or hate it, it changed the way the general population looked at food and chefs. Hands down. Yeah. Chefs weren't celebrities before the... You know, they weren't celebrities. I'm watching your dog in the background.
I know. Pepper's always making cameos around here. This is her first snow day, and she's just losing her little puppy mind.
Oh, I bet. I would, too. My dogs are very excited as well. So you have the Food Network, right? So there's this massive change in how people see food and see chefs. And especially in the Food Network's early days, you know, it was totally different than what it is now. I mean, you know, programming like Top Chef and Chopped and these, you know, think about all the food programming that's on air right now that wasn't there, forget 20 years ago, it wasn't there 15 years ago. So you have all this new interest in food. That's not just for the food elites, right? It's just not for the people who have money. It's for the masses. It's for everybody. So now, you know, you get all these other people who maybe, you know, only went to a restaurant once a month, once or twice a month. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't a part of their day to day, and they're asking where the beef comes from, and do they work with local farmers? You have a more educated consumer, and it's socioeconomically diverse, right? So people can be really into food who are super, super rich and who don't have a lot of money but save their money for these things. To me, the first part, right?
Yeah.
And then after the 2008 crash, before 2008 here in D.C., there was a lot of money that was supposed to be put in. 14th Street was supposed, you know, they talked about 14th Street since like 1995, right? Like it was going to get this total overhaul.
Yeah.
So that was in play. And, you know, there was talks about the stadium, even where the line is. Like they've been talking about the line forever. So there was all these talks, right? And then in 2008, the economy crashes and everything sort of standstills, but there's a lot of money in play. And then it went to work, right? So now we've got neighborhoods, like I said earlier, that have never existed. So the Navy Yard is one of my favorite ones to talk about. Or the wharf. Look at the wharf.
Oh, I mean,
my God, you know, it's a mile of glittery, gorgeous, aesthetically pleasing, you know, a walkway and gorgeous restaurants. And it's the three R's, retails, restaurants, and residences.
Yeah.
And it's beautifully done. Or you can look at Union Market. Like you can go look at all these areas that did not exist. So we, not only did they build the real estate, they built it and they came because there are so many people living in the city now who can keep those restaurants afloat, right? So, you know, it's a little chicken and egg, right?
Yeah,
like
totally.
If we build it, will they come? And if they come, can we support it? So I think a lot of that has to do with how the DC dining scene changed.
Totally. I stand corrected. I love when I stand corrected.
No, I don't think I I corrected you.
I
took you on a little history tour.
Well, yeah, no, that perspective is great because I'm always saying like this stuff didn't exist and it's just true. Like, first of all, where would it have gone? Second of all, how would we have known about it even if it was there?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's just a really interesting perspective.
When did you know that you had like a business on your hands with the list Are You On It?
That took some time, you know, because first of all, I'm not a natural saleswoman. So,
really?
And
I find that so hard to believe.
Not something I thought. I just didn't think. I did not think at the time when I started it that I would have to sell it. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't realize, you know, I mean, I hate using this terminology, brand awareness, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So like today, but you know, you have to know your brand. You have to know who you are. Like, those were not terminologies that I knew of or heard of when I was launching.
Gotcha.
And, you know, it became clear pretty quickly that the list Are You On It and I were one, and that it was about me.
Right.
So people wanted me to come to things. People, you know, it was all about the relationships I were making.
Right.
And, you know, making marketing a part of it. I didn't want anybody to feel like I was doing pay for play. So I had a really fine line to walk, because 90% of what's on my site is not paid for, obviously. Mm-hmm. And what is paid for is pretty clearly marked because we have advertisers. And I didn't have a business model. You know, I go to all these conferences or speak on panels and people are like, what's your business model? I was like, I didn't have one. I am the worst. Like, nobody should follow how I did. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I never put together a business plan. I had no business model and everything just sort of happened. It's the same thing with both radio shows, right? So like I'm doing this stuff on WTOP and I get the opportunity to do a radio show, Foodie and the Beast, with my husband. And once again, like, I don't have anybody telling me how to do a radio show or how you book it or like, you know, like,
yeah.
I just guessed. Like, we just jumped in with both feet and guessed. And thank God it worked out for the best. But I'm sure if I had more guidance or if I had people who were invested in what I was doing, mm-hmm. maybe I don't know, maybe it'd be bigger, maybe it'd be syndicated. Maybe there are other things I could have done. But you know, I just think, just like you guys, like, we're all head down, right?
Yeah,
we're all
yeah.
head down. We're working as hard as we can.
Yeah.
And with the introduction of social media, and I'm, mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
That's okay. That was one question I was going to ask, because I bet it shifted your business a lot.
Oh, social media, yeah. It's a major time suck.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can go down a rabbit hole pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, I think,
yeah.
do you know what I mean? Like, especially today, like,
yeah.
It's so funny when I look at my streams on Twitter, especially, mm-hmm. not on Instagram and really not on Facebook at all, but you know, on Twitter, I have my food following, right? Like, I always look at like what's happening in the food world, but now I have a whole other, you know, following, and it's always politics, and you know, that can take you down a pretty bad rabbit hole.
Quick. So that's actually interesting. I've noticed, so Twitter is like, has kind of become irrelevant in certain industries, but I feel like in the food industry, it's still super strong. The community's still there. Do you find that to be the case?
Listen, Twitter is still the way that people break stories.
Yeah.
It is still the way people communicate. I don't know where it's not used, because I know a lot of people think it's becoming irrelevant, but I mean, I hate to bring this up, but the president of the United States uses it as his major form of communication.
Yeah.
And most people in the news world are on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Do you know what I mean? Stories are broken on Twitter still to this day.
Yeah.
Food, fashion, maybe the fashion industry is more on Instagram.
Right.
Visual. You know, because it's more visual.
Whenever anything goes wrong, like national emergency or if I, you know, customer service, Twitter's still like the first updated, for sure.
Exactly. So, you know, like if a restaurant is closed for the evening, they put that out on Twitter, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's so fast. You don't have to you don't have to go through a bunch of photos and all of that. It's just really quick, fast bites of information.
And it's also actually the last, like, organically in order of time. true, too. That you can keep that way.
Also true. No, very true. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think social media is an interesting, like, as you said, it's a really interesting accompaniment to what's going on in the food scene, because people can really learn more about what's going on. I mean, we didn't really talk about blogs, but the, you know, the introduction to blogs has also changed the food scene. You know, like 10 years ago when blogs, like especially in the DC dining scene, exploded, like it went from a sprinkling to like hundreds, and now we're back down to like a sprinkling, which, you know, I think all things right themselves. I think the same thing is going to be said with Instagram. You know, there's like massive coverage on Instagram, and then it'll write itself. You know, I think it's an, I think Instagram is an lovely way to communicate. I love Insta stories. I think that's like, just like you said about Twitter, Insta story is my favorite because I don't have to think about it, right? Post it, write two words, put it out. I just, you know, because sometimes you can sit and look at something for Instagram and be like, you can sit for way longer than you should about what you should write in it. And then you're stuck. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And then you're like, what is this going to do to my grid? And then you're like, why do I care?
Right. Exactly. No, I'm totally, completely with you. No, I think what's happening with social media is going to be interesting. Yeah. I wonder what I'm looking for is what's next.
Yeah.
Because I feel that the Instagram, Twitter, Facebook melange has been here and we're using it. But like you said, people think Twitter is dying.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what people say.
Right.
And, you know, Instagram is being manipulated in so many ways with its algorithms and people who spend money and people who don't spend money. So like, it's going to be curious to see what happens there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going to happen with Facebook. I think businesses are still use it, but I don't know. So I'm curious, like, what's next? What are we looking to add to our plate next?
Yeah. So with your brand, or, you know, your multimedia business, having been around for a while now and having really established yourself deep in some traditional roots, how do you stay up to date on all the new things that come out? Like when social first came to be and like whatever is next, like where do you kind of go for these resources, or do you kind of have like a team that you're consulting with?
You know, I don't, and I probably should. So, you know, Facebook, I had sons in college, so I kind of learned about that early. And then and I had sons in college. So the same thing with Twitter. So my oldest, you know, sent me this thing about Twitter. He's like, I think this is going to be big. He's now in Silicon Valley. So I totally trust him when he says those things. Right. So exactly. So, you know, I joined Twitter and I joined Facebook, and I really started using Twitter as a way to communicate about the food world right away. Like, I got Twitter right away. I thought this was a great way to communicate. It made a lot of sense to me. The one I didn't get right away, or I just didn't see its way of communicating right away, was Instagram.
Yeah.
I sort of was a little late on that game. It's not that I wasn't using it. I was, but I just didn't see where I could go with it. And so that's why, to me, now that I understand what social media platforms are like, that's why I really want to, I'm so curious about next steps.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody's talking about video, which I get. I'm a little, I wonder how you guys feel about this. Like, when it comes to Insta stories and communicating on any of my outlets, actually, I'm very conservative when it comes to using video, and especially video directed at my own face. You know, like, I think there's a generation that likes to hold the camera facing them and selfie talk and put that up on Insta story. And I'm personally fascinated by it because it makes me feel incredibly self-conscious.
Gotcha.
So do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I know that's what people are doing. I know people are making money off of it. I'm impressed by it, but I don't think I can, I just can't pull the trigger on that yet.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's all about, like, the whole point of all this at the very beginning and moving forward has been to build community, right? So, like, however it is that your audience feels the most connected to you is what I'm all about. There's a lot with video. It's like, production is really expensive. That's why I love, like, Insta stories or Facebook stories or whatever. And Casey and I come from the beauty world, and, like, in the beauty industry, that's everything, right? Like having that visual on a face and feeling connected to like a founder or something. But but that's just in the industries that I know.
Yeah, and I think video for food is like the Tasty app and the Tasty videos. I mean, that was just like somebody doing these hyperlapse videos for food and it just freaking went insanely viral.
Right. Well, and those are cool. I mean, especially for like the recipe-based people.
Yeah.
That makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
What I think, what I struggle with is, you know, you watch people who like are holding the camera up to their face and they're like, hey, it's me, Nikki Nellis, and I'm walking into the latest hottest restaurant, right? It just, it feels inauthentic.
Yeah.
So I just, it's just not something... I don't know.
Yeah,
I think you have to like want to engage, because I know when I put my face to an Instagram story, my engagement just goes like 100 billion times through the roof. Then if I were to just post a photo with like a caption of what I was saying, so people do want that like face-to-face connection. But if you don't want to do it, then you're probably not going to engage other people.
Right.
So just like what makes sense for you and your brand, I think.
Right. No, it's very good advice. I think it's just becoming comfortable with it. Do you know what I mean?
And it's so weird and scary at first, honestly. But once you start doing it, it becomes less and less weird and scary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially when you like get messages and then you're actually really communicating with people. You're like, oh, wait, there are people behind that screen.
Yeah, I'm talking to a human out there.
And you're not just talking alone to your phone, because that's what it feels like in the beginning. You're like, I'm alone in my room.
Yeah.
Right. Well, actually, it's funny that you say that, because that's one of the things I struggle with when I watch people. I'm like, so you're just sitting in your room or you're, you know, but I hear you. I know what you're saying is accurate. All right. I'm going to think about it. How about that?
I find that I get really weird. I'm already like super weird in general, but I get even like weirder when there's a camera and I'm like making weird eye twitches and I'm like, I don't know what that's about, but that's my authentic nature in the public apparently.
Well, yeah, I just think I'm also super vain. I just think from a vanity standpoint, I always want to look my best.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm super hypercritical.
Yeah, window light and filters.
Get yourself in front of a window. That's where it's at.
use that star filter, everyone. That twinkle filter.
Yes.
That fixes everything.
It like whitens your teeth. It like
fixes my neck, my hormonal neck acne.
It's great.
Wait, which filter?
It's purple and it has stars on it.
We'll show it to you.
Yeah.
Okay, you'll have to show it
to you. We'll get a screenshot. It's really good. Mirror. That and window light, and you'll be like, wow.
You're
really okay. Actually, I really want to do this.
Look how good I look.
That's so fun. Well, actually, it's only funny because my daughter, who is 16, likes to watch the Kardashians, which, I mean, no judgment, but a lot of judgment. I just can't. But one of them was doing that. I don't know. I can't tell who any of them are. But, I mean, I know who Kim is, but I don't know who the other two are.
Alike. They do.
So they're always like talking into their phone, and one was like being filmed talking into her phone, and I was like, she doesn't look anything like that.
I know. That is the thing. That's what's so tricky. That's what kills me with Instagram, is like so many people are so competitive and feel bad about themselves, and it's just like it's not real. And like then I'm like, should I use a filter? Because then I'm like joining the fakeness or whatever. And it's like, whatever, honestly, I'm like, whatever feels good for you, and as long as you're honest about it and you're not like that, I'm not using a filter.
Right. No, that's like, you know, getting injections and like I mean, I'm turning 50. I get all that shit, and I'm totally into it, and I have no problem. Like, when people are like, what do? I tell everybody everything.
Oh,
I have no problem sharing my beauty routines at all.
Let's talk about that, because I'm a huge fan of natural beauty and Botox. So I believe in balance.
So listen, I think that Botox is botulism, so it is natural to a certain extent.
I love this woman.
Yes, I can spin it. I can totally spin it. No, I think that listen, we have such information these days on skincare and beauty, and there's obviously thousands and if not millions of products out there. And there's a lot of really good information. I love, you know, there's some great places around DC, like that Ivy Wild is amazing.
So,
and
yes.
I'm obsessed with Blush Med Spa.
Yes.
And I just think there's a lot of information out there for you to get what you want. I like organic and natural products.
Me too.
I struggle with them a little bit only because I want to make sure they're, I like the medicinal products too, because I want them to do stuff.
Yeah.
But
I love it.
You know what I mean? Like I want action. My facials are action based facials. Yeah. Like I don't, you know how girls, some women go to, or men go to get facials, you know, like as a way of relaxing.
Yeah. No,
it's not. No, this is work. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know if you guys know Blush Med Spa, Arlene Lamba's owner. And, you know, I'm a part of their program. So I go in and get my laser once a month. I get my microderm and facial, SkinFit facial once a month. And then I use a variety of products that either they recommend or I'm using a bunch of the natural stuff from Ivy Wild as well.
Oh, which ones are you using from Ivy Wild?
I have to look. I'm terrible at names. The one I'm really kind of obsessed with is the it's a CC cream, but it's a serum.
Okay.
Whoa.
It's by Kosas. K-O-S-A-S.
I have their lip on right now.
Oh, do you? Very I think cool. Their stuff is great. Yeah, I really great. Love.
You, like, looked at me.
Do you like it? Wait, I have a question. Do you do IPL? Because I'm doing that tomorrow, and I'm a little nervous.
That's the one that it feels like rubber bands bouncing on your face,
so
right?
It's not so bad. It's not that
yeah, I was like, that's not working for me. So I do right now. I do Clear and Brilliance.
Okay.
So it's like a mini Fraxel that I do once a month.
Okay.
I think it's, I mean, obviously you have to change and grow with your skin. You know, just like you have to change and grow with your workouts. Like as you age, you have to make adjustments.
Yeah.
So
I will do whatever you're doing because you look amazing. Seriously.
Thank you.
Send me that routine,
girl. I have good genes. I'm very lucky, but I'm also on it. You know, like, I don't think you can't just hope. That's not a hope and a prayer. You got to work at it.
Yeah, for sure. So is there something that you've recently discovered that you're obsessed with? And is there any sort of self-care practice that you do?
So, yeah, there's a couple things, actually. So first and foremost, I started doing 305 Fitness.
Oh, people
about,
love
this. Have you been?
No, but it's like dance-based, right?
Yes. So I started doing 305 Fitness almost a year ago, and I try to go 3 times a week, and I never understood, and I've always worked out. I've been working out since I was young, and I've done trainers and class. I've done everything. And it's really the first time that when I finish a class, like I'm on a high. Oh. I never understood that runner's high. Like I've heard about it my whole life. I was like, maybe that's just not for me. Mm-hmm. I've done yoga, I've done bar. I've done all the cycling classes. I did, what's that other one? Solid Core.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've tried all of them, and everything is great. I'm like, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
But, like, 305 Fitness is fun. It's a sweat fest. Yeah. The music is great. It's you really can let go, and I'm really loving it. I love it.
Cool. I'll have to try that.
I am a total profit for them. I tell everybody about it. I'm making my daughter go with me on Saturday,
so
and I cannot wait to watch her get her ass kicked. totally and completely unprepared for this.
I feel like I'm gonna win.
So that would be my first thing. And then the other thing I also started, and I know this sounds super like on trend with what people are doing, but I have integrated meditation into my life about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
I find it as hard. I think it's the hardest thing to do, and it's only 12 minutes.
Yeah.
I try to do it 3 to 4 times a week. It does not come easy to me. I use the app Calm, which I really like because I really need guided meditations. So I love, I'm including it in my life, and I'm also including, I use an online app for, like a gratitude journal.
Yeah. That's my jam.
And again, it's when we talk about authenticity, again, I find it really hard.
Yeah.
I think, when you want to be thankful for things, you want it to come from the gut and from the heart.
Right.
And that can be, I think it's difficult. I think it's, I find it difficult. It's not that I'm not grateful for everything in my life, because I am. But when you want to put it down on paper, it's hard not to get judgmental.
Yeah, and it's a weird feeling because you're like, if I don't put this, does that mean I'm not that grateful for it? And right. then, like, right. can I just put puppies, coffee, and husband every day? Like right. what are the requirements here?
No, it's you become very judgmental. Yeah. And then also, you don't want to be too grabby, right? So, right. you know, we all want things in our lives, like whether we want a pair of shoes or a purse, or we want, you know, something, you know, if we want something physical or we want something emotional or, you know, yeah. something in our hands. And I find that balancing our wants versus our needs yeah. and getting that down on paper is what's hard to do.
Yes, I like that. That's it definitely is.
Yeah, I love that perspective as yeah. well. Do you find, though, that even though you find it difficult to do these things, that it's still benefiting you?
Yes, I find I do, because I feel, and I'm not a mushy-gushy person and I'm not a super spiritual person, mm-hmm. but I do find when you put it out there, you're opening yourself up to things. Right. And one of the things I've learned, because I've had some incredible opportunities that have, I mean, literally landed in my lap, right? So 2 years ago, I was the regional ambassador for Celebrity Cruise for a year. And that was such an incredible experience. And it literally landed in my lap. And
that's amazing.
While I was incredibly grateful for the opportunity, there were things I just didn't know what to do with it. Do you know what I mean? And now when I look back on that, I really feel that by realizing how great that opportunity was, I see the missteps I made where I could have made that opportunity better. And now, you know, I really feel like I've put it out there to be like, I want other opportunities like that.
Yeah, right.
So, do you know what I mean? So yeah. I sometimes when you're in the middle of something, it's hard to see what next steps are.
Yeah, for sure. Retrospect, man.
And you know what I mean? So I do believe that, you know, integrating meditation and journaling
yeah.
kind of helps bring a little bit of clarity.
Yeah. That, I mean, you're very self-aware, you can tell. Yeah. And I think that's, like, first and foremost, the key to actually being functional at these things.
Yeah, I also think it's so helpful for people to hear the perspective from you that, number one, you didn't build a business model, you didn't have a plan, and you still did it. So you don't have to, like, always have the perfect setup to have your own business or turn your passion into your business. And then this, too, I think is such a helpful perspective to know that sometimes things are hard, but you do them anyway for, like, the greater good of...
Yeah.
Well, listen, anybody who pretends like any of this is easy is lying.
Yeah, totally.
You know? So, I mean, back to your whole social media thing. Everybody wants to sound like their lives are perfect and that their marriage is great and their children are fabulous and they're going to Bim Bamboo. And, you know, that's great for them.
Yeah.
I'm not like that. Yeah. You know, I just... Marriage is tough. Having kids is difficult. You know, being a working mom is not easy. Like, none of these things are simple. Are there days that are fabulous? Yes. And I have lots of them. Mm-hmm. And are there days that suck? Yes. And I have lots of those too.
Yeah.
So I think for any, you know, working woman, whether you're a mom or not, but we are in special rarefied times.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's up to us to support one another.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, my women friends are everything, especially with my business. And supporting one another is going to be key moving forward. And everybody should rely heavily on them for that.
Yes, yes, sister.
Oh, so awesome. I love it.
Okay,
before
so,
we let you go, I want to talk to you about some and kind of get the inside scoop about the holiday scene for this year.
Yeah, where are we eating, Nikki?
Yeah,
where am I eating?
Like, great cocktail bars. If there's any, like, bars that go, like, all out for holiday. And then, obviously, you guys are, like, super into the event scene. So, if there's any, like, do not miss holiday events in the D.C. area.
Okay, well, so, you know, everybody goes all out for the D.C., like, in D.C. for the holidays.
Yeah.
So, if you don't want to cook, like, Thanksgiving is coming up. But if you don't want to cook Thanksgiving, if you don't want to cook Christmas Eve, or you have family in town, there are, first of all, there's so many restaurants that are now preparing it, and you can just pick it up and lay it out on your table, which I think is fabulous. There, almost every restaurant in the city is doing something for the holidays. So everybody does something different. I think it totally depends on what you're looking for, but there are some really cool activations, I'll call them. Mm. Like, for example, both Bourbon Steak and the Watergate Hotel are doing these igloos.
Ooh,
that you can go and
so
sit
fun.
In. I know, right? So much fun. So you can, like, so they're out on their patios and you can sit in the igloo. Like, you can get out and, like, have drinks and cocktails in there, which I think is... Yeah. Doesn't that sound like today? Like, so super
yeah.
special. The Watergate actually is also, they did this last year. They have they put like an ice skating rink up top on their patio. So that's a really cool thing. Of course, the guys, Derek Brown and his drink company people, they do a holiday pop-up every year, which is always really fun and great. I just got a press release that Sababa, Shuk Bajaj's new Israeli restaurant, mm-hmm. is doing a whole thing for Hanukkah, which I think could be really cool.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just think there's not a ton posted yet about the holidays, but it's coming. In the next couple of weeks, like, everybody feels like Thanksgiving is early this year.
Yeah, it is.
Right? It feels really early.
Same time every year, people.
Right, exactly. But it feels early.
Yeah.
So I know, and I've already alerted my team. I was like, be prepared.
Yeah.
The Monday after Thanksgiving, everybody is going to be like, oh my God, we got to get ready for the holidays.
Yeah.
So I just think you're going to see a mad dash of promos coming out really in the next week and a half.
Cool. We'll keep our eyes peeled.
Okay, great.
You probably love and hate. Well, you probably hate this question. That's my guess. Do you have a favorite restaurant?
So I don't, and I'll tell you why. So two things I'll tell you. First, I feel like when people ask me what's my favorite restaurant, what they really want to do is tell me what their favorite restaurant is. And I mean that full-heartedly. Like, I learned that a long time ago.
I didn't want to tell you what mine is. I don't have one.
What's your favorite restaurant?
I don't have one.
That is, like, way too hard a question for me.
Yeah,
there's no way
one.
I could ever say what my favorite restaurant is. Like, even in one city, forget it.
Right. Well, so that's sort of how I feel. I mean, there is such great dining right now in D.C., mm-hmm. Whether you want to go the fast casual route and, you know, go check out Chico. They're going to be opening up
so
in DuPont Circle in January. You know, you've got... Ivy City is blowing up with new restaurants there, like Gravitas.
So good. The
Wharf, in the next couple of weeks at the Wharf, I mean, Nick Stefanelli's new restaurant just opened up, but Todd Thrasher's Rum Distillery is opening, and so is another Rappahannock Oyster Bar.
Yeah.
That's going to be amazing. He's going to do a tiki bar there. That's going to be amazing. And Rappahannock Oyster Bar, which you can now go to at Union Market, but they're opening up on the Wharf as well.
So ready.
That I know, right. So that's all fabulous. And then, you know, you have over by Yards, you've got Chloe, obviously, and the Salt Line and the new All Purpose and Blue Jackets over there, too. Like, there's so many areas where you can just go and, like, do a dining crawl.
I know.
So much fun.
A dining crawl. I'm so down for that.
Yeah, just, like, pick a neighborhood and spend the day.
Oh,
so
good.
Exactly. Exactly. That would be my recommendation.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to do that.
I'm so hungry now.
I know, right? Well, the last place I would tell you guys to check out, and actually you're not far from there, so you probably already have been, but have you checked out Johnny Spiro's new place, Reverie?
No, I haven't been yet.
Mm-mm.
So it's across from Chaya Taco on Gray Street. It's actually down the alley, just so you know. It's a little confusing. But we had dinner there 2 weeks ago. I was really impressed.
Okay.
It's a beautiful...
We walked by that yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful little boutique-y space. You could do something more formal, like... his ribeye, but he has like this fried chicken sandwich that looks ridiculous.
What?
So I know. I was totally unprepared for that. I think there's some really interesting dining in DC, and I do believe that 2019 is going to show more, even more.
Can't wait. This is just the best food time of year, too, in my opinion.
God,
I'm like all about that comfort food.
Yes, exactly.
Love it. Well,
the stews,
Nikki,
and the
thank
suits.
Thank you so much. You were so much fun. Such great perspective.
So fun.
Well, thank you. This was a terrific, like, I felt like I was just sitting with my girlfriend chatting. It was just lovely.
Thank you.
Like our favorite thing.
Where can we find you on the internet?
So the website is thelistareyouonit.com.
Okay.
And on social, it's at Nikki Nellis, NYCCINELLIS.
Awesome.
You guys, Thanks so much for joining us in the Foxhole. For exclusive content and super fun offers like discounts and promo codes, sign up for our email list on our website at godownthefoxhole.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at GoDownTheFoxhole.
And please, please, if you love this episode, leave us a review on iTunes.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.